Blog Talk Radio.
We don't offer any prenatal care.
We don't offer prenatal care at Planned Parenthood.
Planned Parenthood offers abortion, so they don't offer prenatal care.
Prenatal care. These are the kinds of services that folks depend on Planned Parenthood for.
And a president who will fight for prenatal care.
Prenatal care. And that is what we want to focus on. That is what is so vital.
Thank you for calling Planned Parenthood. My name is Pat. Can I assist you today?
Hi, I was hoping to make an appointment for prenatal care.
For what type of service?
Prenatal care, pregnancy care.
We don't have prenatal care here. Planned Parenthood offers abortion, so they don't offer prenatal care.
Okay, just abortions.
Yeah. Unfortunately, no, we wouldn't provide any type of prenatal services here at Planned Parenthood.
We're not a prenatal care provider. No, Planned Parenthood does prenatal care.
We don't offer prenatal care at Planned Parenthood.
We specialize in abortions. You know, that's what our ultrasounds are for, to see how far along the patient is.
Planned Parenthood, we do birth control, you know, things
like
that are major. We check for STI, but we don't do prenatal.
We tell you you're pregnant, and we also prefer to do the abortions.
Okay.
We don't do prenatal services. I mean, it's called Planned Parenthood. I know it's kind of deceiving.
Do you have OBGYNs here?
We do not, no.
Oh, you don't?
No.
Oh, okay. All right.
Which is a deceptive name, right? I think the same thing. Or, you know, if you were looking at the termination options, we can do that as well.
Did you know that Planned Parenthood can take care of all your reproductive health needs? Whether it's an annual exam, pregnancy testing and counseling, prenatal care, we are here for you with high-quality, low-cost services.
Thank you for holding. This is... How can I help you?
Hi. I was wondering if you guys offer prenatal care.
No, we don't. Not at the moment. Neither our Hampton or Richmond office does. We don't offer any prenatal care.
Is there any other clinic you can refer me to?
I don't know of anything. I would look around on the internet.
You can try CareNet. You can do prenatal care.
CareNet? Okay.
We only offer family planning services and abortion services.
Not at all at Planned Parenthood.
Okay, so not at any Planned Parenthood. They don't have prenatal
Correct.
Care.
No, see, we don't see pregnant women as a way of giving prenatal care.
Okay.
We see pregnant women, you know, if they are considering other options.
And like what other options? Like what do you see the doctor for?
At this location?
Yes.
So at this location, you guys do medication abortion?
What pregnancy services do you offer?
We only offer termination services.
We actually don't offer prenatal services. We're not licensed to do so in Oregon or Washington.
Do any of the Planned Parenthoods?
No, we do not offer any prenatal care.
There are millions of women all across the country who rely on Planned Parenthood for not just contraceptive care. They rely on it for mammograms.
We do not have mammogram machines at our health centers, and we've never stated that we did.
The $500 million that gets given to Planned Parenthood every single year goes to female care. It goes for screening for cancer. It goes for mammograms.
We do not have mammogram machines at our health centers, and we've never stated that we did.
Planned Parenthood, for example, doesn't provide mammograms. Now, I know people say they do, but they don't. In fact,
yeah, they do.
We do not have mammogram machines at our health centers, and we've never stated that we did.
What's going to happen as a result of this, if this bill would ever becomes law, millions of women in this country are going to lose their health care access,
mm-hmm.
not to abortion services, to basic family planning, you know, mammograms.
We do not have mammogram machines at our health centers, and we've never stated that we did.
We never have had mammogram machines at our health care centers, and we never said that we did. That was Cecile Richards, the CEO of Planned Parenthood. And thank you guys for listening to that opening audio clip there. I wanted to play that because there's just so much deception behind the whole abortion industry. It's amazing to me how people still today want to believe that, you know, Planned Parenthood does something like provide mammograms, cancer screenings, things like that. And they just don't. And so what you heard in that montage, you know, is that, you know, on the one argument they'll make is that they provide women's prenatal care and things like that. And then an investigative reporter starts calling around to all the clinics and they say, we don't provide prenatal care and we're an abortion clinic. We don't do ultrasounds. The only time we do ultrasounds is for an abortion. So when they're doing the PR campaign, it's one line. They have, to quote a famous presidential candidate, they have a one policy for the public. And then in private, they have another policy, right? And so that's how it is. And that's how they do it. That's how they've done it for years. They've been able to get away with it for years. And the thing that really shocks me the most is Planned Parenthood receives over $500 million a year in taxpayer funding. Now, they're going to tell you, well, that none of that, because there's a law in the books says that money can't be used for abortions. But my take on that is if that money is used to keep a clinic open, if it's used to buy the tables that they do the abortions on, the ultrasound machines that they use only for abortions, that money's going towards abortions. And, you know, their argument might be that they, you know, that's reimbursement for birth control and things like that. And it's just shocking. Abortion has been the scourge on America. It is really the one true red stain on America. I wore my red shirt tonight for a purpose, and that's because of this topic. And tonight's show is going to be very, very emotional. It's going to be personal in terms of I used to be pro-choice. Before I got born again, I used to think, who am I to impose my religious beliefs on others? And there was a time in my life where that would have been on the table. I'll just be completely honest with everybody. Not now that I know the truth. We've had a lot of things going on here in Indiana recently with a bill that came through our state house here that didn't even make it out of committee. It died in committee because of so-called pro-life candidates afraid to take a radical stand. And so I'm joined in the studio tonight with my good friend and frequent co-host, John Jacob. John is a pro-life advocate. John's been down at our state house holding up signs and preaching and talking to our state representatives over the past several weeks during the course of this bill. John, are you with me here?
I'm here, Brent. Thank you.
Awesome. Awesome. So, John, were you able to hear that opening monologue?
Yes, I was. I didn't hear the thing about the Planned Parenthood, that opening portion of it.
Okay.
But,
well, essentially, it's just the how that on the one hand, there's audio of their CEO saying that we need this money because of it provides women's services like, you know, mammograms. And then she sits before Congress and says, we don't do mammograms and we've never said that we have. And so you've got two different clips of her lying about it and lying. And, you know, she'll say that we provide prenatal care or things like that. And then, you know, the clip will come out to where they're calling all these abortion centers. And I'm going to play a couple other audio clips tonight. Hopefully, John, you'll be able to hear them. You may not. If not, just tell me and I'll have to explain them to you. But a couple of Planned Parenthood, previous managers of Planned Parenthood facilities that now have had a change of heart. And are coming out and speaking the truth about Planned Parenthood and what's going on there. But I wanted to have you on the show tonight, John, because, when it comes to the front lines of this issue of abortion, I can't think of a better person to call and talk to. You've been out there these last several weeks. Indiana had a bill that was trying to come out of, you know, go ahead and come out of committee that didn't make it. Why don't you, can you explain a little bit about that bill and the name of that bill and kind of what it stood for?
Yeah, I'd like to give kind of a pre comment, if you don't mind.
No, I don't mind. Go ahead.
You talked about, you know, being pro-choice, and I'm right there with you, Brent. I used to be pro-choice before I got saved, before I came to know Christ. So I'm not sitting there trying to cast stones, and I don't claim to be very politically savvy on a lot of this stuff. I have friends on the pro-life, I like to call it the abolition side, the abolition of abortion that are much more savvy on this side. So I have a friend of mine who really, God used him to really move me out of my complacent spot, really, and just doing more, and up for the unborn. His name is Brian Trank, and I just like to really thank that brother. But anyway, House Bill 1134 was authored by Representative Kurt Nisely, who is a born-again Christian. And Kurt, essentially the bill would repeal all the statutes in Indiana authorizing and regulating abortion. And it would find that human life actually begins when a human ovum is actually fertilized by a human sperm, and that it would abolish all of the laws on the books, and it would make abortion illegal in every instance, and that would eliminate even all the exceptions, which I know that's going to be a lot. That's going to be a real sticking point for people. So I hope we can kind of hit those things, because I know those are important for people, and I think they're important issues to address somewhere in the process of us talking about those.
No, absolutely, absolutely. So, John, you had an opportunity, to be down there on the front lines. Can you just kind of explain kind of what happened with that bill and what you kind of, went and did and felt like God was leading you to do down there?
Yeah, what I felt like would want me to do is just go down there and be a voice for the unborn. That bill, House 1134, was actually in committee, and I don't know if people are familiar with the legal process in Indiana, but typically a bill is introduced, it's authored by a representative, and then or multiple, and then it's put into committee, and then if it is heard and voted on in the committee, it'll go out to the House chamber, be voted on. If it makes it out of the House chamber, it'll go over to the Senate. And then if it's voted on in the Senate and it's passed there as well, it will then be passed on to the governor who can then sign it, or he could veto it. Essentially, though, that if that bill never makes it out of committee, it will never make it into the House chambers. And the committee chairman has sole power over that bill. Nobody else does. Representative Ben Smalls, who claims to be a born-again Christian and also claims to be pro-life, emphatically said he was going to kill that bill. This is not secondhand information that I got from him. This is based on two conversations I had with him, asking him what he was going to do about the bill and whether or not he was going to allow the bill to be heard and voted upon. He specifically and explicitly told me, he emphatically told me, he said he would not. He was going to allow the bill to die. And then he explained to me two reasons why that he was going to actually allow that bill to die. One of them was basically that he was concerned that the laws that are on the books right now that are resaving with babies, in other words, the incremental legislation, the legislation that, in his mind, that says you have to go get an ultrasound before you go get an abortion, that says an abortion can only happen up to 20 weeks. He's saying, well, those babies, we would lose that. We would lose those laws. And his concern, and this is his main concern, which was my last conversation, was that he was afraid of the federal government. He was afraid that the federal government would come down on the state of Indiana and sue the state of Indiana because it's basically defying Roe versus Wade. And that's really what the states need to do.
Right.
Now, in the process of that, what's really sad is that Liberty Counsel, who is a Christian legal defense, they came out prior to this bill being killed this past week on the 21st, and they said that they would actually defend Indiana for free to the Supreme Court if the federal government sued the state of Indiana. And they still chose, Representative Small still chose to let that bill die, and Representative Brian Bosma, who is the House Speaker, also supported Ben Smalls fully in his decision. He said, we have more important things to deal with than this bill.
More important things to deal with than the destruction of life, babies, humans.
Right. I called Representative Smalls to repent twice. He would not. He had other people who confronted him, friends of mine. He would not. They asked him to have this bill heard and voted on. He refused. I tried to contact Brian Bosma, Representative Bosma, and he refused to get back with me. My last conversation with Mr. Smaltz didn't go so well. He walked out very angrily because I was confronting him and on his relationship with Christ, and you know that he was a Christian. That well, what I was going to tell him was that this was something that he needed to do. The path was clear, but I couldn't even. I had half that out, and he got angry and stormed off.
So to be clear, John, what he was abstaining from was simply to allow it to be heard in the committee, right? It would still have to go to a vote in that committee to make it out of committee, which would have presented another set of issues if it could even make it out of committee. And then it would have to go to, you know, both houses of the government to be voted on, which, you know, would be a long shot there. So rather than just letting it run its course, he wouldn't even take the first step. He wouldn't even take the first step to let it be heard in committee. Am I understanding that correctly?
You're understanding that perfectly. He would not allow it to be heard nor voted upon. I asked him both times. I said, will you allow the bill to be heard and voted upon? He said, I will not allow it either. I will not allow it to be heard. I will not allow it to be voted upon. So ultimately, you know, it still had to be voted on the committee, you know, heard, and then it had to be voted on. And if the committee killed the bill, it really would have been out of his hands. He couldn't control that, nor could he control what goes on in the House, nor in the Senate. I told him, I said, look, Representative, your responsibility before God is to make sure that you do the right thing. That is your responsibility as a follower of Christ.
Yeah.
And I said, and ultimately at the end of that, I said, you will stand accountable to the Lord Jesus Christ when you stand before him. And he basically said that was my opinion.
Well, that's not your opinion. That's the Bible. I mean, that's what the word says, that we all will give an account. So John, you know, do you think it's a situation, John, where they put their political aspirations above their faith, above their relationship with the Lord? I mean, I can't think of any other explanation. In other words, they're worried about using political clout to get something like that on the floor that might cost them an election, might cost them getting reelected, you know, might cost them their, like I said, their political aspirations. You know, today it's a state congressman, tomorrow it's a United States congressman. So they typically have, a lot of them, you know, political aspirations. Do you think that is a situation where they buckle to that kind of perceived pressure, that it's going to cost them some political capital?
My opinion, I would agree with you. I think as a further underlying root, though, in my conversation with them, what I can emphatically say is that in my conversation with these representatives, with different people who are out there, because I've had other conversations with other people, is really the bottom line is the fear of man. I feel like really what I'm hearing in the conversation with them is, this person operating in the fear of man instead of operating in the fear of God.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
the Bible says the fear of man is a snare.
Right. Right. Bible says, you know, why do you fear man, you know, that can destroy the body? You need to fear the one that can destroy the body and the soul. I mean, that's the one you should be fearing, not the one that can destroy the body. The body's nothing.
Right.
You know, the body's
right.
Temporal. It's here for a short period of time. It's a vessel. Well, John, you know, how disappointing, you know, how disappointing, and Representative Smaltz and the fact that he would not even allow it to be heard and go before the committee just to have a committee vote on it, or even just to even be heard. I mean, what cowardice. I mean, what absolute cowardice. Now, there are those that would say this is not a fight worth fighting. You know, it's too radical, whatever. But sometimes there's a call to be radical. You have to be radical in order to get things done. You have to be radical to challenge the status quo and in order to overturn something like Roe versus Wade. And a lot of people would say, well, it doesn't. You know, what a lot of people don't realize, John, is that when they ruled on Roe versus Wade in 1973, they did not have the ultrasound technology that we have today. They certainly did not have the 2D and 3D imaging that we have today, which is like the latest, greatest thing where you can literally see facial expressions, and it's just incredibly amazing. And so today it would be a different story, I think, if you were looking at a situation where those guys were faced with that kind of scientific and imagery that they could see, perhaps their opinions would be different. And, you know, I'm of the opinion, John, that life, in fact, I'm reminded of a video I saw here recently. It was on a news thing that the explosion of light that happens when an egg gets fertilized by sperm. And there's this huge bolt of light that burst forward. And it's an amazing video of just that life spark that happens when that happens. And, you know, I've also seen the memes online where it says, why is it that cells in the womb are just that, but cells on another planet are life? You know, if you found right. living cells on Mars, it's life on Mars. Yet you got this cluster of cells that are forming in the female, and it's not life; it's just a fetus or whatever name they want to give it. And so you were down there, John. You were down there preaching quite a bit, weren't you?
Yes, I was. I would go down, take my lunch time, take some of my personal time, make sure that I wasn't doing our work time, and I would go down in the afternoon when the house was actually meeting. I had signs that I would bring inside the building. They were graphic abortion signs. I mean, the abortion signs that I'm sure many people have seen. That people will hold out in front of the clinics of dismembered babies, or babies that have completely been just obliterated, you know, cut into pieces.
Mm.
This heart-wrenching, you know, pictures. And I also had two other small post boards, one that said repent and trust Jesus, and I had another one that said killing House Bill 1134 killed babies. And then what I would do is I would just stand in the back of the House chambers and I would hold those signs up to a lot of the standing crowd out there in front of the House chambers listening to the bills being presented. And then also I would hold them up so that the representatives that were in there, they were looking back, and a lot of them did. They would, you know, tap, point, look back. Representative Bosma had to endure me sitting back there for the last few weeks. And I tell you, I just kept on praying. I said, Lord, I said, I'm not trying to be mean, but I said, smite that man, not hurt him, but, you know, pierce his heart.
Pierce his heart, yeah.
And, yeah, that you would just grant him repentance and that you would just callous heart of his.
Right.
And, you know, towards the end, I mean, he was getting to the point when I came to the back there, he was stepping out from the House Speaker spot and had somebody take over within minutes after sometimes I would arrive.
Wow.
You know, Representative Smaltz, I know he was kind of looking back there, and, you know, I would preach the gospel. I couldn't bring in amplification into the PA system, into the state house, but as I was there, I was raising my voice very loudly so that people could hear, and I would, you know, talk about, you know, the Holocaust, abortion Holocaust, that abortion is murder. It's premeditated, cruel murder, and it is. We've murdered over 60 million babies in this nation since Roe versus Wade, and most of America is just apathetic, and sadly, most of the churches is apathetic. That's what's even more grievous.
Yeah.
And our legislators who are pro-life, they are, many of them who claim to be pro-life are very apathetic. I mean, that's why I don't even like to even call myself pro-life anymore. I identify with the term abolitionist.
Right. Well, John, I've got a caller that's calling in that wants to talk about a personal testimony. And so I'm going to try to take that call. I've never done this on Facebook Live, and it sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't on Blog Talk. So we're going to give this a shot. So for those of you that are on Facebook Live, bear with me here for a second. Hey, it's Brent Chance, and it's Way of Truth Radio. Are you there? Can you hear me? I'm not sure that's going to work. Says he's live, but I can't hear him. I'm not really sure why. I don't really want to turn that other one on. I tell you what, caller, I know you've got the messaging on Facebook going. Just message your testimony to me, and I'll tell you what I'll do is I'll read it online, and I'll try to get this this live caller thing working on Blog Talk a little bit better and tied into Facebook Live. I'm so new at this, guys. bear with me. I'm still trying to figure it all out. So yeah, just message me that testimony that you're wanting to share, and I will just read it online. John, you ended there before I tried to go to that clip there, that call. You ended with talking about how you're surprised about how a lot of people in the church are when it comes to abortion, and that's really one of the things I wanted to talk about tonight as well. You know, I wrote down a whole bunch of statistics here tonight, just kind of this outline that I wanted to go through. But one of the things I'm amazed by, John, is that let's see. They're trying to call back again. I'm going to try this one more time and see if it works. Hey, it's Brent Chance on Way of Truth Radio. Can you hear me? You might be able to hear me, but I can't hear you. Just message me that testimony, and I'll just read it online if you can hear that. All right. Anyway, John, that's got to be frustrating, right? When you're out there and you're doing the hard work, and I know those pictures you held up were pretty graphic, and I'll be honest with you, there was a time in my life where that would bother me a little bit, but not so much anymore, because nowadays I think you have to be shocking a little bit just to plant an image in somebody's mind. And a lot of people, quite honestly, say, oh, I'm for abortion or whatever, I'm for choice. And until they're faced with the looking at what it really is and how it really works. I mean, would you agree with that?
Oh, I would agree with that wholeheartedly. I had young teenagers in there, and some of them even looked at the signs. They didn't even know really what it was. I said, it's pretty gruesome, isn't it? I said, and they were like, well, what is it? Some of these younger, they were like in their, probably around 12, 13 years old. And then I had some other ones that were just in their higher teens, probably 14, 15, 16, 17 years old. But, some of them didn't even know what it was. So I was describing to them about how basically with that abortion goes in and intentionally goes in and kills the baby and pulls the baby out piece by piece, rips the baby in pieces or crushes the skull or puts saline solution in to basically melt the baby. I said, this is cruel. I mean, we would not even think, we would just be horrified if something like that happened to a human being on the outside. I mean, we cry about, abuse of children, which we should, but yet millions and millions of babies who are treated this way, and yet we treat them as subhuman. I mean, they deserve protection under the Constitution, just like you and I do.
Yeah, that's one of the things.
I will say this: the Indiana Code actually already says. By the way, I don't know if many people know this, but Indiana Code already says that life does begin at conception.
So that's already in the Indiana Code.
That's correct.
I'm writing this guy back, so hold on one second. So, John, have you come across a situation, besides the two congressmen? Hold on a second. The two congressmen, I mean, have you been in a situation where you have come across other Christians that might condemn you for getting out there on the street, holding up the signs? I mean, have you ever had any other run-ins with other Christians in terms of their disappointment or disgust with you for being out there doing that?
Mostly, Brett, while I was in the state house.
Yeah. Well, just when you're out there doing, the abortion stuff, whether it's inside or outside.
I mean, I was doing this outside the state house. I've only done a little bit outside of the abortion clinics. Like I said, I have friends that do this outside the abortion clinics. I plan on going out to the abortion clinics more. But at the state house, I would actually say that most of the people I talked with were encouraging. I mean, they were believers who came up and tried to encourage me in what I was doing as I was preaching and holding up the signs. They were wondering a little bit more about what was going on, what was House Bill 1134. So it was a platform for me to be able to tell them about House Bill 1134. Once in a while, somebody would sneer and look at it, but we're literally just trying to look away. It was just this sickening apathy, and that's the best word I can come up with. It was just apathy, just absolute apathy, and that is what our nation has just been about this, and it just makes me sick to my stomach.
Right.
It makes me sick to my stomach, especially with the callous hard-heartedness of the legislators. Now, I do want to say, there are legislators that are, I would say, that are very, very pro-life. I mean, when I say pro-life, I mean, I'm saying I don't think they're cowardly. Kurt Knightley, I mean, he caught a lot of flack for offering this bill. Representative
right.
Bob Morris, Chris Judy, they co-authored that bill with him. I commend them. I talked with a couple other, not necessarily representatives, but they were people in within, I don't know if they're more committee chairman or what they were, but very much supportive of the bill. But most people actually that came up and talked to me, they were more supportive. I have very few people that come up and tried to engage me that were very hostile. I had a few. I had a couple people. I forget the one organization. There was one lady from the Indiana Right to Life, which came up and she kind of talked out of both sides of her mouth. Which I'm not really an Indiana Right to Life. I don't support them. I'm disappointed in their stance. I think they've helped to perpetuate the abortion infrastructure that we have today. They support incremental legislation. They will not call abortion murder. They will not criminalize abortion. They look at women as victims. They believe in exceptions in the case of rape and incest and life of the mother. And again, there are good answers for those things about the way that God sees the issue of rape and incest and life of the mother. And there's some good solutions to those things.
Yeah, you know what, John? I'm going to play a clip because I was shocked. I'll tell you one thing. I was shocked, John, that when I was doing some research on abortion to get ready for the show, that over 50% of abortions are done with women that would identify as Catholic or Protestant, some form of Protestant. You know, so over half are being done by women that would identify as being Christian, you know. And that was shocking to me, John. That's honestly, that was the first time I'd seen that. And I'll put a link up for those of you that want to go to the website and look at it. It had a ton of statistics. Now, John, you know as well as I do, just because somebody identifies as a Christian, I know lots of people say, oh, I'm a Christian, but they have no evidence in their life whatsoever. Whatsoever with the fact, you know, that would evidence that in their lives. But, you know, if they're asked, you know, well, yeah, I go to church on Christmas, so I'm a Christian, you know, I believe in, you know, sure, I believe in God.
Right.
So
right.
It's very nominal at best. But it was still shocking to see that. And so what I want to do, John, is I'm going to play you a clip of Margaret Sanger herself. And what she says in this clip is she's talking about women of faith that were coming into Planned Parenthood. Now, this was back in the 50s. It wasn't so much they were going in for abortions, but they were going in for contraception, which was very controversial at the time. And let's just listen. I'll just play this real quick. You may or may not be able to hear it, but I'll come back and clean it up and kind of explain it to you. So 1 second.
Today, your opposition stems mainly from where? From what source?
Well, I think that the opposition is mainly from the hierarchy of the Roman Catholic Church.
Of the church. Well, now
hierarchy.
Of the hierarchy of the church. You feel that the parishioners themselves, the lay people in the church, are not against this?
I feel they come to all of our clinics just the same as their non-Catholics do. Exactly the same. So whatever it is that one can have to prevent a pregnancy, but those women will say to us, we ask their religion very often, and they say, I am a Catholic, I've been raised in the Catholic Church, and this, my church is wrong on this. This is the one thing. I will never be anything else, but my church is wrong on this one thing. And that is said over and over and over again.
So, John, what they were saying, I don't know if you're able to hear that or not, but what Margaret Sanger was saying was that over and over again that they would have, you know, not so much the hierarchy that she felt like it was just the hierarchy of the churches that were against what Planned Parenthood would do. And she's saying, but the laity, the women in the pews would come in all the time. And in particular, the Catholic women would come in and say, you know, I agree with my church on every other thing, but this, I don't agree with them on this. I think they're off on this, but everything else I agree with them on. But this is the one thing that I don't agree with them on is, and at the time it was contraception and their, you know, in the Catholic Church opposition to contraception. And so when you hear something like that, John, and it's just, you know, I've counseled men and women and minister to them, particularly men, because that's kind of where I focus, but who are absolutely, have been absolutely devastated by their decision to abort a child. I can think of one case in particular in a small chapel where this man just wept and wept and wept. And he was a big, muscular man's man, and he wept like a child, John, over that decision.
I mean, you know, the Planned Parenthood isn't there to pick up the pieces and the carnage that they
they're not.
It's the trail of death that they leave. I mean, I don't know if many people are aware of this, but the suicide rate amongst women who have had a baby versus a woman who has not delivered a baby, they're actually 6 times more likely to commit suicide than a woman who's had an abortion is 6 times more likely to commit suicide than a woman who has chosen to have her baby.
Yeah. Well, and I also know that there's a breast cancer link there too that nobody ever wants to talk about because it kind of gets scuttled down and buried in the minutia of facts. But there are studies out there that show a definite uptick in breast cancer for those women that have had abortions. So there's some evidence for that as well. And so it's just there's just this long-term darkness that tends to hang over these women that have had abortions. I mean, it's just it's there, it's real, and not just the women. Like I said before, there are men that are usually part of that decision-making process that are equally distraught. I can think of a conversation I had with an elder from a church, an older gentleman, and he broke down in tears as he relayed a story to me about how he drove his daughter to an abortion clinic to have an abortion because he did not want to have the stigma. He didn't think she was ready. And I want to say he not only did it once, but he did it twice. Now he didn't, I'm not sure he was saved when he did that. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt because I don't know. Let me back up a little bit, John, because I think this is important. And I know you feel the same way. And that is that we don't sit in judgment or condemnation of any woman that has had an abortion. It's something that's done. It's been done. And it's not the unpardonable sin. It's something that can be repented of. It's something that God's grace is sufficient for. His grace is there for you just like it is for any other sinner. It's not something that you have to carry around for the rest of your life. You can be free of that burden. It's only the devil that wants you to carry it around for the rest of your life. You can be set free. And I'm not saying you necessarily have to forget it, but you can learn to live and to prosper and to be at one with God through repentance. I mean, would you agree with that, John?
Oh, I would agree 100% with that, because sometimes I think those on the pro-choice side, basically I think they want to say that we're just out here casting stones. And I'm very clear when I'm preaching, especially when I was at the State House, as I preach the gospel, as I couple that with the preaching of that we need to abolish abortion and support of the House Bill 1134, I let people know very emphatically that Jesus came to save sinners. He died for our sin on the cross, and that includes the sin of abortion. God can forgive them for abortion just like he can forgive me for all the sins that I've done. I mean, I'm not here to cast a stone. I'm here to tell you the way out, but also I'm also here to tell you that, you know, with abortion, it is a very big sticking point. The Bible says that God hates the hands that shed innocent blood, Cain and Abel, and Cain killed Abel. You know, God says that the blood of Abel called out from the ground. And I tell people this a lot, and this is not something that's theoretical. The blood of every one of those babies is crying out to God. Can you imagine what over 60 million babies crying out to God for justice sounds like in his ears? Because I tell people all the time when I was down there, I was like, you know what? The only thing, don't mistake God's patience as if he's just turned a blind eye to us murdering all those babies. He is being incredibly patient and gracious.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable to me, John, how patient he has been. And some would argue maybe he hasn't been as patient, that he's turned us over already. And it's possible that he has, the direction this country's gone in here recently. But it's such an abomination, John. I don't even know where to begin with it. And in terms of the spiritual darkness that is around it, the spiritual forces at work there. I mean, you look through the Old Testament, John, and God is constantly, you know, reminding Israel and of the pagans and how they will sacrifice their own and how they would throw them on the fires and how they would, you know, basically destroy their own children. And yet we are, and that was in worship to the devil. I mean, that there's no other question about that. I mean, anytime you're dealing with child sacrifice and offering up a child, you're talking about somebody that's doing it, sacrificing it to a false idol. Now, you know, some people say, well, God, you know, wanted, what thing was Abraham to do it with Isaac, but that's not the same thing. That was a test. God would have never have let Abraham go through with that. But the bottom line is that we are sacrificing babies at about a 600,000 a year clip, and they're getting getting sacrificed to the enemy. And
yeah, they are. They're getting sacrificed to the devil. That's no different. It's being sacrificed up to sexual immorality, the god of convenience. Call it whatever you will. It is an idol. And it's
right.
being sacrificed up to the devil, and it is child sacrifice. An extreme position. That is very clearly factual. And then I would also add that I also, as I was preaching, I would let people know that keep in mind that God ultimately destroyed those, I'm going to say, ites, the Canaanites and all the other ites in the land, all the other peoples in the land, because of the blood they were spilling, and because of their refusal to repent.
Right.
And what I tell people is that don't be fooled. God is not mocked. He will bring judgment on the United States of America. I don't say that with any sense of glee or gladness. My hope and my desire is that America would turn and repent. But I see just so much apathy, and I am very concerned. I've seen this tide, it seems like, even in the last few years, that America has gone from almost angry to the gospel and to these issues to just being apathetic. And apathy is actually just far worse. It's almost like a sign of a conscience that's just been seared.
Right.
And I'm not saying that on an individual level. Obviously, people are going to continue to be saved along the way, but
right.
It's just very disheartening.
Well, I just feel like we've become so calloused as a society, as a nation, as a people, to where anything goes. We're so desensitized, I guess is a good word for it. And so yeah, it's just, to me, it's just straight up demonic. Obviously, we're in agreement on that those 60 million souls lost were sacrificed to the devil. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. And it's an abomination. It's an abomination. And now, you know, you see some of the videos that came out about a year or so ago where they're dismembering these babies, and they're selling these body parts, and they're selling them on this market that buys babies' body parts and livers and brains and hearts and eye. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy. I'm like,
yeah,
you know, and what I find is that, you know, most people that are hardcore pro-choice advocates are usually atheist, or at best they're agnostic. I mean, but typically they're very atheistic. And when you don't believe in a God, then why should you care about killing an unborn child? I mean, you don't care about eternity. This is as good as it gets. And so a child is just a problem that you needed to eliminate. And we're just so callous to do that. But John, hey, I want to read, because I finally did get this person to message me their testimony, and I want to read this real quick, John. Is that all right?
Okay, yeah.
Okay, so it says, John Jacob, thank you for what you are doing. I believe what is lost is the love of life. That is what is truly lost. I myself was dating a woman who I had issues with. I was at a point in my life where I was between relationships. I had moved on when I found out she was pregnant. With me being involved with another woman, she decided to have an abortion. I'm going to scroll down. Sorry. We talked about this. I begged. Her ending statement was, I can't carry a baby that you would take care of without me. And a life was lost. A father has no say in this activity. However, had she had the child and I decided I didn't want the child, I would have been held accountable. Why aren't women held accountable? How is women's rights wrapped up in killing babies? How have we gotten to a point in life that this is a choice? It has to start early. We have to teach safe sex without the sanctity of life. And so thank you for sharing your testimony to the person that messaged us that. And so, John, that brings up an interesting point, too, is, you know, you always hear it's my body, my choice. Well, you know, it was your choice. It was your choice up to the point, you know, to have sex. It was your choice to do it without some kind of contraception, you know, but once that explosion of life happened and life was created, that entity has its own set of rights, as far as I'm concerned. And yes, you're going to carry that baby for 9 months. Now, you don't have to keep it. And I've heard all kinds of arguments, John, and I'm sure you have too. Oh, well, then are you going to adopt the babies? These babies won't be adopted. What about, they're going to live in poverty and be, you know, so many people talk about abortion, but they also want to cut social programs. All these people, all these babies would be on. Well, you don't know that. That's you speculating that they're going to end up in that. You know, I can show you clips of people, babies that were, they tried to abort that made it out of the womb that are living highly productive lives today. So for every argument like that, there's a counter argument, but it's just amazing to me. There's the classic argument. Well, what about in cases of rape and incest? And my argument to that, John, and I know I think we probably differ on this a little bit. My argument to that is, okay, that represents literally less than 1% of the 60 million abortions we're talking about. So can we just take that and sit it off to the side? Let's sit that one off to the side. Now, can we get real for a minute? Can we talk about the 99.8% or 9% or 5%, 99.5% of the rest of the abortions that don't have to do with rape or incest? Can we just talk about that? So what you're saying is, okay, so if I'll carve out an exception, so this is the counter to their argument. So if I carve out an exception for those two things, then we can have a discussion about the other 99.5%. No, they don't want to have a discussion about that either, because they don't believe that. They just want to throw that out there, you know. And so
it's an excuse.
Yes, and that's all it is, John. And that's when they use it. Now, honestly, personally, for me personally, that's a tough call. Right. Because I would never want to put myself in that position, you know, somebody's position where that's happened to. But I also know that there have been lots of women that proceeded with the pregnancy, even though it happened in incest and happened in rape, put those babies up for adoption or just kept the babies, loved the babies, and had wonderful, meaning relationship with those kids. So there is that side of that equation. Yeah, your thoughts on that, John?
Well, I agree with you. I mean basically abortion is abortion for convenience. That's really the bottom line for the vast about 99%.
Right.
And as far as in the case of rape and incest, I understand it's a touchy subject, but I mean, you know, God says, He said, in Romans, He says, shall we do evil, you know, that good may come. You know, I mean, just because somebody's done something bad, in other words, they've raped or committed incest with somebody, you don't go and murder somebody else. I mean, I'm not going to go and say, hey, you know what, that person raped my daughter, so I'm going to go and kill this person. So this other person is going to suffer for that crime. I mean, we can't murder. I mean, we have to establish, is that a human life just like you and I? And if it is, which it is, it's murder. It's nothing more than murder. And I understand it's a very difficult situation for them. But honestly, at least from what I read and what I see, that women, even that go to murder their child in the case of rape and incest, then have to deal with the carnage for the rest of their life that they've murdered their child. And I'll tell you, that's a far worse scenario for them to deal with than to just carry the baby to term and if they want to go ahead and put it up for adoption.
Right.
And the issue of life of the mother, I'll say this, because that one's a big one. That's probably almost the biggest one that gets argued all the time. There is a complete answer for that, totally, and that is this. Siebert Koop, who was a former U.S. Surgeon General, said in his 39 years of pediatrics, he's never known a situation where the life of the mother was in danger as a result of the pregnancy. Now, I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but what I'm saying is that it's a very, very small percentage.
Right.
Now, the other thing is that abortion is actually going in and intentionally killing the baby. Most life-threatening situations with mothers don't happen until after about the 22nd or 23rd week. A child is viable after 22 to 23 weeks, can be safely delivered by inducing and or one or the other C-section. So they can continue to keep the baby up until a certain point and then go ahead and have the baby delivered. Now, the worst case scenario is this, and also I want to address this one too because people argue this issue with me as well, and that is the issue of ectopic pregnancies. And what that is that basically, for any of the hearers who may not understand, is that the egg and the sperm, they're united, the baby is conceived, but it's actually in the fallopian tube.
Right.
There is a procedure now, and it's been successfully done, that the doctor has gone in to actually surgically remove the ovum from the fallopian tube and try to reimplant it into the uterus. And there have been babies that have been born healthy and just fine. Now, if that baby dies in that process, I believe that still honors God, because they're treating both of the individuals as human lives, and the doctor is committed to their Hippocratic to preserve life. And so what they're doing is, in that situation, they're preserving both lives. They're looking for both lives to be preserved. And if the baby dies, at least it's died only because they did everything they could to save the mother and also the baby. And to me, that would honor God. That would not be going in and murdering the child. If God so wills that the child will live, that he will have it happen. And it has happened. And it has happened multiple times. So every single excuse that's come up on the inception side is answered. And I still believe that every single one of those is still murder if we choose to intentionally go in and end the life of that unborn child.
Yeah. So, John, you've probably heard the argument too. Well, you know, hey, well, if we outlaw abortions, you know, people are still going to want to go get them, and they're just going to do them in the back alleys and the, you know, the shady hotel rooms. And, you know, there's going to be a lot more women that, you know, that die, and that blood's going to be on your hands and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, you know, again, I've never seen any concrete evidence of just how often that happened. One thing I will say, John, is that the church does bear some responsibility in all of this. And what I mean by that is that we somehow got to a point in society in days past, and maybe it was legalism or whatever, to where that was such a stigma for a young girl to get pregnant that many times her Christian parents would be the ones, just like that elder, that would take her and get an abortion to spare the family and certainly her, but, you know, sometimes in their own situation, their own their own lives, the embarrassment of, you know, this sin that she has obviously gotten caught up in. And so the church does bear some responsibility towards the proliferation of abortion. I'm thinking of a somebody once said that outside every abortion clinic, there should be a sign that says open by permission of the church, because the church has taken such a backseat role. You know, I'm thinking about this Christian that messaged me and says, well, I don't let my faith mix with my politics. And I just think that is such a complete, what's the word I'm looking for? Just an excuse.
Yes.
Because what he's saying is, I want to separate my faith from my politics, because I want to, you know, do the worldly thing, which is to support abortion. And so I'm going to separate all the biblical scriptures, all the things that I know as a Christian I should, and I want to separate it. And so we do bear some of the responsibility, John, as a people, I think, for the proliferation of it. You know, one of the things that I think
– I agree.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think one of the things too, John, is that there is this disproportionate – focusing, and it's undeniable that how abortions disproportionately affect the Black community more than any other segment of our society. I'm looking at a quote from Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, And she talked about, she was a known eugenicist. Eugenics were Hitler believed in eugenics. And so Hitler was actually a fan of Margaret Sanger's and, her ideas about eugenics and kind of took those to the next level for the Holocaust. You know, in other words, we're going to have this super race of humans. And it wasn't just the Jews that Hitler killed. Anybody that they deemed to be mentally insufficient, that had any kind of a handicap, any deficiency at all those people were killed as well. Homosexuals were killed if they were known homosexuals, because they looked at that as a defect. And so that was also Margaret Sanger. She looked at the black population as defective and as less than. And so she really wanted to, in some of her earlier statements, she really wanted to try to suppress the black population growth. And so this is a quote from her. She said, "We do not want the word to go out that we want to exterminate the Negro population. And the minister is the man who can straighten out that idea, even if it occurs to any other of their more rebellious members." And that I took that straight from a Washington Times article about Margaret Sanger. In other words, they realized that we can't just come out and say it. And our best hope is to get some of these black pastors on board with our propaganda, that this is good for the community and et cetera, et cetera. And you know what? In large part, they were able to do that. They were fairly successful in doing that. But, so are we seeing today, John, do we see today the evidence of that kind of mentality, somebody that would make that statement? I would suggest that, yes, we do. When you look at the fact that 79% of Planned Parenthood surgical abortion facilities are located within walking distance of a black or Hispanic community. Again, that's from the Washington Times. 79, almost 80%, John, of their clinics are located in black neighborhoods or Hispanic neighborhoods.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, I have, Brent, this is a whole other vein I could probably get on that I really have sat back and pondered and prayed over. And it's just what I want to say this one comment. And I do not want people, I love people of every skin color, because I don't even identify myself. I'm Arabic, so I don't identify myself even as white. So, but you look at you talk about the percentage of black women who have abortions. I mean, blacks only comprise about 13% of the population.
Right.
Yet they comprise like well over half of the abortions that are committed. And it's ironic that you find that the vast majority of also the murders that are occurring are in the black community. And I'm not trying to necessarily absolutely make a link, but sometimes I wonder if there's a proportional link there spiritually, if that makes sense.
Well, again, I think we're talking about the spiritual realm when it comes to abortion. And so when you've got that kind of death and destruction, John, do you know that last year in New York, more black babies were aborted than were born? Let that sink in for a minute. That's just incredible to me. Here, I got a couple other ones. Since 1973, more blacks have been killed by abortion than AIDS, cancer, heart disease, and violent crimes combined.
Wow.
Last year, more black babies were aborted in New York than were born. I just said that one. Every week, more black babies die in abortion clinics than were killed in all of the Vietnam War. Every week.
And you don't hear anybody crying about that.
Nobody talks about that. A black baby is 5 times more likely to be aborted than a white baby. 5 times more likely, yet they only make up 13% of the population. Think about that. Abortion kills more black people in 4 days than the KKK did in 150 years. I mean, when you start hearing those kind of statistics, it's just mind-boggling. And I want to share with you guys, we're going to run a little bit long tonight, because this is not something that I think we can do in an hour, John. And I'm not going to do a 2-part show on it, but I want to go until we're done. So we've got an extra half an hour on Blog Talk. I set it up tonight just in case that was going to be happening, and it is happening. But I want to play this 911 call from a mother who came home, and I'm just going to warn you guys ahead of time. Let me put the warning up on the screen here. This is very emotional. If you listen to this audio and you don't break out into some tears and feel the emotion that this mother feels. She came home and she found her 23-year-old daughter dead in her bed because she had an abortion and something went wrong. And 4 days later, she was dead in her bed. And so I want to play this audio for all you guys. John, you may not be able to hear it.
It's cold.
Hello?
My daughter. I think she's dead.
What's your address?
Okay,
what's going on?
She's been sick.
She's what?
She was sick. She's what?
How old is she?
She was 23.
Okay. Is she awake?
No.
Okay. Is she breathing?
No. She was asleep all day.
Okay. Listen, are you right by her right now?
Yes.
Okay, listen carefully, okay? I want you to lay her flat on her back, on the ground or on the floor, no pillows.
I can't get her on the I can lay her on the bed. She's on the bed.
Okay.
She's too heavy.
All right, listen. Look, I know you're very upset. Listen, I want you to help her, okay? I'm going to tell you how to do chest compressions, okay? Are you doing that?
No, I can't push her over. She's on her side. I can't roll her over.
You can't roll her over?
No, I can't.
I can't push her over?
I'm crying.
Okay. I have help coming to you, okay?
Tonight, no, please.
Okay. Okay. Ma'am?
Yes.
Ma'am, listen. Are you sure you can't push her over for me?
John, I don't know if you're able to hear that or not, but it was...
Yes, actually, my wife was actually cold, so I could actually hear it. Yeah,
okay.
I did. It's heartbreaking.
It is unbelievable.
You can just hear her heart. You can just hear her heart being ripped out.
I'm having a hard time keeping it together right now. It is unbelievable to me, John, just the heartache, and that's the destruction that abortion leaves in its wake. That's the absolute destruction that never gets talked about, that gets swept under the rug. And quite honestly, Lord, forgive me, it pisses me off. I mean, it crushes me, you know, because we are left as a people to pick up the pieces and to deal with that. And it just never gets talked about. It never gets addressed. It's just a shame.
Honestly, Brent, if we can't get ticked off about that, then I don't know what we can get ticked off about. I mean, the Bible says be angry and do not sin. And I'm not sitting there saying be angry and go out and do something rash. All I'm saying is that, I mean, that should anger us. That is, there is such a thing as righteous anger, and that we should have a righteous anger toward that what's there with abortion. I mean, Jesus talked about loving, I mean, the two main commandments were to love God and love our neighbor. And you know the parable of the Good Samaritan in Luke 10. You know, I mean, it talks about the man who was beaten and on the side of the road.
Right.
And you know, here comes the Levite, you know, and he passes on by. Here comes the priest, the religious guy, you know, and he passes on by. And who helps him? A Samaritan.
Yeah.
A Samaritan helps a Jew. And, you know, the bottom line is that this guy was asking, okay, who is my neighbor? And the real answer Jesus was giving him is everyone is your neighbor.
Yeah.
The unborn are our neighbor, and the church has got, if we love God, we've got to show it by loving our unborn neighbor. We've got to do everything we can within our power, along with preaching the gospel. So I still think that preaching the gospel should be first and foremost,
right,
before anything else.
Yes.
But I think along with that, though, we can do good works, and one of those good works that we can do is we can fight against this issue of abortion, to see abortion completely abolished in the United States of America. But we can't do that, you know, one just by one or just a few people. I mean, but if the entire, even if a fraction, a good fraction of the church would just rise up and do their part, man, we could have an incredible impact.
I agree 100%, and not just on the issue of abortion. I mean, the church is I mean, we have gotten to the point where, you know, you had the Johnson Amendment where pastors couldn't speak out from the pulpits on, you know, political issues and things like that. And I don't know if it's just, like you said earlier, apathy or fear or what, but I mean, we have got to with hearts of compassion. Like Dr. Brown, Michael Brown always says, we have to have hearts of compassion, but man, we got to have backbones of steel. In other words, we have got to, in this ever increasing culture war, and it is a culture war, we have got to have, our backbones have got to be made out of steel. We can't compromise enough for the world. There is not enough compromise in the church for the world, because the world will wax ever and ever increasingly wicked. And there's just going to come a point where, I mean, if you have any faith at all, you're going to eventually going to have your back up against the wall as a Christian. For a lot of us, it's already there. It's already happened, you know, but there's a plumb line that's being drawn and laid down. And, you know, Christians are going to have to start standing up. They're going to have to start putting their faith in with their politics. Sorry, you're going to have to do that. You know, that's what gets me, John. Is, you know, you got people that say, well, I don't mix my faith. You know, I don't want to impose my faith or my beliefs on other people. And I always say to myself, why not? They don't think twice about doing it to you. The world doesn't think twice about, you know, telling you that abortion's okay and it's a woman's choice. They don't think twice about, you know, allowing transgender people into your bathroom with your daughters and your wife. If you don't take a stand, they will run over you roughshod because you won't take a stand. You won't let your...
And you know,
go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. And you're right. You're right, Brent. And you know what? The father of lies, the devil, is behind all that stuff. And you know what? The devil is ruthless in being on the offense like that. But yet we just passively sit back. We have been bullied into this complacent position. Where in the world did we ever get the idea that being humble and meek means that I'm complacent and apathetic? That is not what meekness and humility is. Jesus was strong. He set his face like flint. He was the strongest man there was. He stood against evil. He preached the gospel. He did not cave in to political pressure or religious pressure or the fear of man. He lived in the fear of God. He was a perfect example of how we should live as Christians. And, I mean, the church has got to rise up on this. We have got to stop letting the world bully us.
Right.
If you don't mind, can I kind of read three scriptures to you?
John, we're going long tonight. I don't mind. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry.
No. I'm just saying we're going. That's in the works. I already planned on it. So go ahead.
These are very relevant verses to this. But Isaiah 10:1, it says, "Woe to those who enact evil statutes, and to those who constantly record unjust decisions, so as to deprive the needy of justice and rob the poor of my people of their rights, so that widows may be their spoil and that they may plunder the orphans." You know, that's what babies are. Unborn babies are really orphans. They've been abandoned by their mothers and their fathers primarily. And
yeah.
Ephesians 5:11, it says, "Do not participate in the unfruitful deeds of darkness, but instead even expose them." Most Christians are loving. You're judging. No, God says you actually call attention to what is evil. Shine light on the darkness.
That's right.
Because I tell you, the cockroaches scatter and you start shining light on things. And that's what people basically at the light at the state house, that's what it was like. It was like cockroaches scattering. It was like, go away. Shut up. We don't want to hear you. And it's like, yeah, you don't want to hear about what we're doing and the brutality. Hitler, a monster because he murdered 6 million Jews. Yet we murder over 60 million babies,
right.
And we ask, we say he's a monster. Who's the real monster? You know. And the other thing is that there's one other passage. This is probably the most powerful one. Passage: Proverbs 24:11-12. Deliver those who are being taken away to death, and those who are staggering to slaughter. Oh, hold them back. If you say, see, we did not know this, does he not consider it who weighs the hearts? And does he not know it who keeps your soul? And will he not render to man according to his work? I mean, God is clearly saying here, we need to step in and we need to deliver those who are being taken away to death. In other words, the unborn. I mean, they're staggering to slaughter. And here he's saying, oh, we didn't know it. We didn't see it. Of course not. There's just, everybody's just kind of looking the other way. They don't want to see it. And he's saying, you knew it. You knew what was going on. It's going on right in your own city, right in your own neighborhood, and you don't care anything about it. These are creatures. These are beings that are made in my image, and you're just allowing my image to be destroyed over and over and over. What we're really saying to God is, God, I don't even know how to express this, but basically, it's like essentially every time we're committing abortion, we're and destroying God's image. We're basically flipping God the bird.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, John, it's amazing to me. It seems like to me sometimes that people get more upset about, the Humane Society and animals getting put down over there after they're there for so long, being put to death, than they do about the unborn child, the unborn man, the unborn woman. I mean, it's staggering to me.
Yeah.
I mean, just that whole concept of where our priorities are. It's I don't know. It's just staggering. You know, I go back, John, and just a real quick shout out. I'm talking to John Jacob, good friend of the show, on tonight's podcast. You're listening to Way of Truth Radio. This is Way of Truth Radio. The best way to stay connected with us on Way of Truth Radio is through Facebook, like our Facebook page. Anytime we do Facebook Live, it'll automatically show up in your news feed. You'll know we're live. We usually try to send something out on that. But going back, John, to this topic, I just wanted to say that when you go back and you look at, so I think sometimes people think that this whole issue with abortion is primarily an issue for in terms of pro-choice. It's a left issue or it's a Democrat issue. What a lot of people don't realize is the majority of the Supreme Court justices that made that decision on Roe versus Wade back in 1973, a majority of them were appointed by Republican presidents. So they were, more conservative, quote unquote, or more right than most. But I think there were two Democrat nominated justices or that were on the court, and one of them voted for and one of them voted against. And there were only two that voted against. And something else, we've got our next series is called Lost in the Lodge. And it's, should Christians be involved in Freemasonry? It's going to be a three-part series, a three-hour series on Freemasonry. We've got some ex-Masons that are going to be coming on, talking about the Lodge, talking about their experience in the Lodge, what brought them out of this Masonic Lodge. And it's funny because you quoted Ephesians 5:11, and one of the premier Masonic ministries out there to try to get men to come out of the Lodge is Ephesians 5:11 Ministries. And I've been in contact with them. In fact, I'm meeting with them Sunday afternoon to prepare for the show. But what a lot of people, what I found was interesting, and there's so much darkness in the Lodge and some of the oaths that they take and the blood oaths that they take, John. Again, it's just that spiritual darkness, that veil that's over them. But an interesting thing, of the seven Supreme Court justices that voted in favor of Roe versus Wade and in favor of abortion. Four of the seven were either Freemasons or had deep Masonic ties. And so that just goes to show you it's all interconnected. You know, you just have to connect the dots. It's kind of all circular. You know, in witchcraft, it's all about the circle. It's all about the circle. And I can tell you, it all kind of circles back around and is interconnected. And so I found that fascinating that the, you know, Freemason, there were several Freemasons on the Supreme Court. I was shocked when I was doing research for the show Lost in the Lodge, how many Supreme Court justices have been Freemasons. I mean, it's just staggering. But I thought that was an interesting correlation, John. But, you know, I, going back to the original point, you know, this is not that case, Roe versus Wade, was decided by a majority Republican appointed Supreme Court justices.
You know, some of my abolitionist friends, they've really educated me on this, Brent, and I didn't realize this, but actually I found something out that was very interesting. People are so emphatic about the issue of Roe versus Wade, don't realize that because of the organizations like National Right to Life and because of pro-life legislators who have basically negotiated with the devil, they've negotiated with incremental legislation by putting laws that limit abortion instead of calling for its abolition. What they've done is they put a complete infrastructure in all the states to allow abortion to exist. So in other words, what that means is, practically speaking, is that even if Roe versus Wade goes away tomorrow, there is now an existing infrastructure on the state laws of not just Indiana, but almost every single state in the union, so that essentially abortion will not miss a heartbeat. It will still continue tomorrow if Roe versus Wade goes away. Most likely it will not go away because there will be a fight based upon those laws. Without the removal of those laws in the books, that infrastructure still remains, and it needs to be destroyed.
I agree.
It's a blight. And you know, one thing somebody said to me outside of the state house, this man walked by, he agreed that abortion was bad. He goes, "Well, what's one person going to do?" And I said, "You know what?" I said, "William Wilberforce, the English Parliament leader back in, what, the 17, 1800s, he is one man that God used to eliminate and abolish slavery in England. You know, don't under Jesus Christ was one man. Moses was one man. Joshua was one man. You know, I could just go down the list. God can use, don't underestimate what God can do when you put yourself in his hands. When you put yourself in his hands and you're saying, God, I don't know what I can do. I can't do anything apart from you. But through Christ, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." And there's a little story here. There was a boy who was walking down the beach, and the tide had come in, and these starfish were hanging out. They were on the beach as the tide went out, so they were all going to die. So this little boy started feeling compassion for these starfish, and he started picking them up one by one, throwing them in the ocean, saving the starfish. This man comes up, says, "Young man," he goes, "what are you doing?" He goes, "I'm saving the starfish." He goes, "Son," he goes, "look at all these starfish out here." He goes, "what are you going to do?" He goes, "you can't save all these starfish." He goes, "what difference are you going to make?" And the boy looked at him, looked down at the starfish, grabbed another starfish, threw it in the ocean, and he said, "I made a difference for that one." And I tell you, some of my friends who go out to the abortion clinic and who turn a woman or and a man, you know, away from abolishing, you know, aborting their child, that's a life. I mean, that is an entire human life that God has helped to use them to keep from being murdered. I mean, if Christians would just doing their part,
right?
And that's my plea to other Christians: is you can. There are people. I mean, I can get you connected to people. You can go out to abortion clinics. It's powerful to sit out there. You can just sit out there with the signs, try to plead with them, preach the gospel. You can pray. You know, you can call your legislator, put incredible pressure on them. I mean, there's a lot of things you can do to see abortion being abolished. But if we just sit back and do nothing, then really nothing will get done.
Well, yeah, you're right. I mean, you're absolutely right. And, you know, the thing that really got me, I hadn't intended on doing, originally I intended on starting Lost in the Lodge series this week, but I'm kind of glad things worked out the way they did because I needed more time. But the thing that got me started on this was, number one, John, watching your post on Facebook about the Indiana bill that was kind of dying, you know, in committee. And you know, your post about going down and preaching and things like that. But number two was on the 18th, just a few days ago, a lady named Norma McCorvey died on the 18th of February here. And what a lot of people may not know, they may not recognize that name, Norma McCorvey, but Norma McCorvey was Jane Roe of Roe versus Wade. And she died, like I said, a few days ago. And she, but a lot of people don't realize is her testimony, John, going back to talking about the people that, you know, stand outside the abortion clinics, just changing one life or changing one mind. I think she was 23 when she got pregnant with her third child, and wanted to abort it. And so she challenged the abortion laws and she got a couple women, female lawyers that took her case to the Supreme Court. We all know how that turned out. We've been talking about that all night. But what a lot of people don't realize is that because the abortion laws hadn't changed yet, she ended up having her baby, that baby, putting that baby up for adoption. I'd love to know what happened to that baby, but I don't know that that would ever happen. But and so that law that went forward, and so she, for many years they've used her name on the pro-choice side as some kind of hero, but really she was always kind of cast out. You can just look at some of the videos of the way they used her prior to 1995. Interesting thing happened in 1995. In 1995, she was running an abortion clinic, and there was a minister down in Texas that moved his anti-abortion group into the office building next to hers, where they had the clinic, and they would clash with each other. And of course, the protesters would be out there. And but over the course of several years, they began to have kind of a friendly. At first, it was friendly animosity. They would tease each other. Kind of came down from all the rhetoric to kind of teasing each other back and forth to where they would sit outside sometimes of each other's clinics, or places or offices, and they would talk. And, you know, this pastor shared with her some of his struggles and things like that. And so for the first time, she saw him as a human and not as this, you know, not as her enemy. And God began to work on her. And she didn't understand it. And this is how deep she was. She didn't understand his humility in talking to her and his humanness, that she went home to read tarot cards to see if she could figure it out. She was going to consult the spirits to kind of figure this out. Long story short, Norma McCorvey, Jane Roe, this pastor developed a relationship. She starts to go to church. She gets saved. A lot of people don't realize that. And she spent the last part of her life. In fact, I'm looking at a quote from her. "I am dedicated to spending the rest of my life undoing the law that bears my name." And so she dedicated her life, her latter years here, trying to overturn the law that was all about her and her case. And it's just amazing. And when I saw that, and it just touched me how God is capable of changing. Christ can change any heart. You know what I mean?
Amen. Amen. Praise God.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
it's just,
go ahead, John.
Yeah. I mean, that's just amazing. And I'm so glad that Norma got saved.
Yeah.
You know, towards the last part of her life. So.
Well, John, I think we're almost out of our second half an hour that we've gone over. We've gone for about 90 minutes. So for all of you guys on Facebook Live, I know it's a long one. Hopefully it's been an interesting one. I know for me, it's been extremely emotional. And John, I know you feel the same way. So John, why don't you just kind of give me your final thoughts and then I'll wrap everything up here.
You know, I would say just the bottom line is that for people not just to take a pro-life abolitionist position, that, you know, to see that abortion is called what it is, it's murder, to see that it's criminalized, to not just negotiate with it and put in exceptions. I wouldn't support organizations that negotiate with abortion, like Right to Life, because those organizations have actually helped perpetuate abortion. And I would say the bottom line is, you know, love God, love your neighbor. I mean, if you know Christ, then love your unborn neighbor by stepping up and doing something about it. Don't just say it with your mouth. Otherwise, then it's like the Book of James. It's a dead faith. And we've got to step up and do something for the unborn. Otherwise, we're like that Levite and that priest who just walks down the road, sees the guy beaten up, dead, and, you know, dying and bleeding, and we say, don't have time, got other things to do.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, John, thanks so much again for joining me, and I'm going to let you go here, and I'm going to sign off. So I really appreciate you being here and sharing your wisdom with us. God bless. All right, everybody, so I'm going to end the blog talk episode here real quick online. End the episode. Okay.